Representing East Oakland, man.
Hey, hey, welcome back to another episode of the Hawk Vision Podcast. I'm your host, Chuck Hawkins, here to help you shorten the learning curve on your way to greatness. Make sure you like, share, subscribe across all of your social media platforms, especially here at YouTube. More importantly, share this podcast with other visionaries just like you. Before we get started, a lot of you have been asking to send messages in on how to support the show. So if you take a look at the show notes, you'll see a link to one of my favorite things, coffee. If you know anything about me, it's that I love me some coffee and I don't do anything until the coffee kicks in. So that's right. Now you can support the show. If you're a subscriber and you do so, you'll get some behind the scenes clips, some audio, some visual possibly too. It's going to be great. As always, can't thank you enough for all the DMs, comments, and messages. Cannot continue to grow this show without you. Today's episode is going to be a little different. Our guest has been on the show before. She absolutely crushes it every single time. She is one of my foremost thought leaders when it comes to business, when it comes to crossing that bridge between the church house and the secular world where I tend to rock heavily. But she is a friend of the show, somebody I go back almost 10 years with. She's been both the hero and the villain recently, and we're going to talk about it. Miss Tonya Griffin, the doctor, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, you're one of my favorites. Top five.
Thank you. Same here. Absolutely. You know, it's funny. Every time we get together, we get to talking, and then it's like, oh, wait, we got to record. So
yes.
I'm glad we was able to get to it this time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So when we got together, we were, you know, sending some messages back and forth. And you said you want to do an episode on dating in the Black church. And yes. For me, I said, you know, say less, because me and you, I know we're going to have a good conversation about it. But I have to ask, why this continues to be a topic that so many people are drawn to, not only because of the obvious, but more so because we continue to see the same behavior from both sides, right? So talk to me a little bit about why this continues to be a sweet spot for conversation.
Well, I think it's a sweet spot because it changes. It changes for, you know, whoever is, you know, the leader of the church, depending what they lay out for the congregants. It might be different from what's laid out at home. So I would answer that question based on the personal and public presence, right? Mm-hmm. You act one way in the public and another way in private. And so this is, I believe, the way that the church operates, right? We have a life that we do off scene, and we have one that we do in front of the scene, and people don't get to always know what that really is. And so I think it's ever changing. Yeah. And so it depends who, you know, depends where you are. You might get more if you go back behind the scenes, right, in the personal space of others, or yeah. And if in the camera, they'll show us something totally different than
than what's really going on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes.
We had talked about the last time you were on, we talked about the business of church. And I feel like this is one of those things that kind of perpetuates the business of church, because I don't want to say, I'm going to sound like a non-believer when I do this, but sometimes church is so scripted and scheduled out, even mm-hmm. down to the 4 or 5 messages that you know you're getting, you know, every month or every year. Do you think that scheduling, that rigid programming is part of why this still is a hot button or a hot issue topic?
No, I mean, I'm not sure what you mean by that. Maybe you want to elaborate a little bit more, but based on what you just asked, I will say no.
Okay. So the reason I ask that is because when we have these, you know, we talk 2021 is going to be, was the year of restoration. 2022 is going to be the year of new beginnings, right? 2023 yes. is going to be a showtime. When we stick to those messages, we tend to gloss over real life. Right. And it's one thing to talk about faith. It's one thing to talk about dedication and giving and sacrifice and all those things. But if we don't spend a lot of time on growing the person, none of those other things can grow. And that's why I was saying, do you think that it kind of stymies this topic?
Yes. Yes. So I do think that what people should be receiving as it relates to being formed into the Imago Dei, they are not receiving it within some churches. Yeah. And I don't think that's based on, you know, these, you know, like you said, these kind of programmatic types of things where schedules are tight, and you're running in and you're running out, right? I don't think it is that. I just think it is the, what are we feeding the people, right? If you feed them right, the time doesn't matter. And they will receive what it is necessary for them to receive, even if we look at the Gospels, right? Jesus didn't always spend a lot of time with them. But when he spoke, you know, there was so much weight on his words. It caused this transaction or exchange within the individuals that he was speaking to be changed, like what we say, into the Imago Dei. And so I don't think it has anything to do with time constraints.
Gotcha. Just more so that, you know, that there's not enough. Maybe there should be, and again, I've never had to be part of the couples ministry, right? Because I've been with mine locked down for quite some time.
But oh my God.
I always joke that mm-hmm. a couples ministry by design, if it's successful, should dissolve itself, right? Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. you shouldn't have a growing couples ministry in any church. What do you say to that?
We shouldn't have a growing couples ministry in the church.
Right. Meaning in theory, the way that I think, and some of my viewers are going to be like, Chuck, I never knew you would say this. But if you have a couples ministry, right, let's mm-hmm. say you have a church, good 300-400 people. You got mm-hmm. 26 in the couples ministry. That sounds like, given the odds, you got at least 6-7 couples coming out of that, right? If they're doing the right thing. If you're teaching them mm-hmm. how to look past, you know, the hourglass and the church dress and the cologne and yes. all that, if mm-hmm. you're teaching mm-hmm. them how to look past that, mm-hmm. sounds like you should have some mm-hmm. couples coming out of that, right? But why do couples ministry right. seem to grow?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or sorry, singles ministry.
Right.
I'm sorry.
You're right. I was going to say, that's okay. You know, I was just reading here in the Black Church where women pray and men pray. And I think the question that you're asking, you know, Deborah Cooper, kinds of the research that she did is around this question, right? And in particular, why are there so many Black women single in the church, right? Yes. And so then you said, if you are, you know, teaching the right things, why don't we have different results, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that you answered your own question with that, right? Saying if we're teaching the right thing, there should be some real results. And so that begs the question, what are we really doing? Do we just have, mm-hmm. right? So do we just have these things just in name only to make the appearance of what we're doing in the church is, you know, what God has called us to do? And I think that we've gotten used to those types of things. So the results, the real results, sometimes really don't matter.
Don't matter?
What I said is they really don't matter, right? Gotcha. When, right? So, because if it really mattered, then there would be those numbers would move, right? Mm-hmm. Like what you stated. And you should be looking at those numbers, right? To say, okay, so why isn't the needle moving here? What are we teaching? Right. Maybe we need to change what it is that we're teaching. Maybe you need to do some surveys to find out what it is that, you know, people are looking for based on what it is that we want to teach, right? Because that could be different. You know, people might say, hey, this is what I need. But so churches should be checking these areas to make sure that the needle is moving. And sometimes people just have programs just in the name of programs. But if there are not any real results, then we probably should rethink having that program.
Yeah, the singles ministry has been one of the things that I have never understood. And again, I haven't had to be in one for quite some time, right? But mm-hmm. I just, you know, the logic part of me is looking at it and saying, well, if they're doing it right, the numbers should be dropping. But, you know, so be it. So mm-hmm. like I said in the intro, you have been the hero and the villain.
Yes.
Yeah. Recently, yes. As accomplished and as refined as you are, why is that a fight you've chosen to engage in? And we're gonna dive in after you do this answer. But mm-hmm. why is this a fight you've chosen to dive into?
Yeah, it's a great question. Why? Because subsequent generation of women is that are coming behind me. You know, we just can't leave the condition of what we're teaching and what we're, you know, displaying in church the way that it is. I would not want to pass that down to the next generation. Mm. So we need some adjustments and some real adjustments. And so this is the why I stepped into the space of the fight. I always say, you know, I put myself in this position, set myself on fire so those can come and watch me burn. Because to me, it doesn't matter, right? If you, I'm not in this just to come to a church for a feel-good message. That's not why I'm in here. I'm in church because something is drawing me, one. But two, there should be a change. I'm running to the church to say, I don't want to live like, you know, I was living prior to, you know, knowing the Lord Jesus Christ. But yet, we still see a lot of that happening in the church. And I believe we just make too many excuses of why the real change isn't happening.
Yeah. So you ran to the church, you ran to a book signing, and you ran into a very prominent pastor who has, you know, and I've always had my opinions of, never met the man, so I can't say they're valid or not. But you ran into a very prominent pastor and some sparks flew. And them singles ministry numbers dipped for a minute. Talk to me a little bit about what that relationship was like. And then we can talk about the post-traumatic stress from that relationship.
Yeah, what that relationship was like, it wasn't a relationship, right? I think we talked about that before we started this, right? You talked about in the business model, that like this wake up call is that this is just transactional, right? Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't even really call it a relationship now in hindsight. I wouldn't do that at all. Yeah. Because if it was a real relationship, what happened would not have happened at all. It would not have played out in the public arena in this manner if it was a relationship. It wouldn't have played out where you have a pastor literally lying in the public space about someone he said he had a relationship with. And so I would argue that was not a relationship at all in hindsight.
So we, I guess now since the name's out there, anybody could do the Google search, anybody could, you know, pull up on YouTube, they've seen it. What was it about Jamal Bryant that you were attracted to initially?
Initially, I was attracted to, you know, he's considered a thought leader, specifically, you know, in the Black church.
Yeah.
He, you know, allows us to think about things that that we need to think about, right? So that's what was the draw. The draw was this intellectual capital, I would say, that it seemed as though it was there.
Yeah.
But clearly, if you measure it by some other things, it is not there. And that might be hard for people to receive, right? Because you can't have a thought leader saying wonderful things and we all gravitate to it. But yet, still, we have a thought leader who is, you know, sleeping around with multiple women in a way that babies are popping up or a baby is popping up, right? And so you got to ask yourself the question, like I said in the interview, people call Solomon wise, but he couldn't be. He left Israel in the biggest debt of his life. And so where's the wisdom in that, right? So that's what I'll say. I was drawn to, at the beginning, the intellectual capital. Two, I come from a smaller church, which was wonderful. I loved it. and so I wasn't really... I didn't really have an understanding of these bigger entities until I met him. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so when did you realize outside of the obvious that it was taking a turn past the intellectual capital
to, that's a great way to
yeah, past the intellectual yes. capital. When did you realize it was taking a turn? Because if we're having this conversation, right, there had to be a willing participant on both sides at some point.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yes. So when did you realize mm-hmm. that it was taking that turn?
That is a great question. So because you're talking about the realization, right? So when I think about, I need to agree with the things that I was seeing to move the needle for myself, right?
Right.
And so I don't think the realization happened really until Monique pulled the receipts out.
Oh, wow.
Right? Right. Yeah, yeah. Because I was able to see it at the very beginning of the relationship. And what I mean by that, I'll give you an example. And so this might be hard for those that say, might not believe in God speaking to them, but that's this example I'm giving is, you know, the Lord sharing some information. And so I was at his home and the Lord showed me his closet and how everything was laid out really, really nice.
Okay.
But then the Lord told me to look on the floor and his laptop and phone and everything was there and the cords were tangled up. And the Lord said, he pointed at the closet. He said, that is what you see. He said, but this is what I see. And he pointed to the cords. And even hearing that, I didn't want to agree with that, right? Because right. clearly we still wrestle with, does God speak even today, right?
Absolutely.
And so I guess I could say, in my own behalf, maybe that's what it was. Maybe I just wasn't sure, but that was a lie.
She's like, I hear you, but let me check for myself. Hold on.
Right, let me check. Right, hold on. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So yeah, you've been obviously, like I said, hero and villain.
Yeah.
Devil's advocate. What, do you understand yeah. why people were upset or frustrated or angered that you had exposed this pastor?
Well, let's say this. The church is about what I thought we exposed, right? We exposed the wrongdoing so that our behavior will be changed. And so for me, that was interesting to see the responses of other people getting upset because their Trump was being exposed, right? If I had to look at it in comparison with those things, the cousin of Donald Trump, right? She comes out with a book to tell the truth about Trump. And everyone gets upset at her and say, what you wrote cannot be right. Right. And so this is their leader. This is their champion. And we've seen it before. We've seen it with Anita Hill. Right. Yes. She comes against Clarence. Right. And so what happened? It's 2021. And we're just hearing from Anita now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So people don't like that. I had people who knew me, who knew my family. That know that our life is very quiet. And so she reached out to me because someone said to her, do you know this young lady from Rochester? Well, most of y'all are going to see it out there anyway. You know this young lady from Rochester? And so this is what she said. She said, yes, I know her. And so they asked her, well, the claim she's making against our leader, is it true? She said, if that girl said it, it's true.
Mm.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. And it's funny because, you know, when we talked about it in the middle of everything, right, it was one of those things where I was like, I'm not comfortable releasing the name because for me, it wasn't necessarily about him because, again, I don't know dude. Right. And to me, I'm a man's man in that I'm going to protect the people that I know. Right. The people that I rock with, the people that I grew up with. I'm going to protect those people. I'm going to do my best to protect their image when something comes across my desk. And when you were telling me about it, I was like, we can talk about it, but we ain't going to do no names because I wanted to protect your peace. And so when I saw that you had finally become comfortable with releasing the name on your own, and I was like, okay, cool. Now we can talk about it. And so my question after that was, everything plays out the way it plays out. You guys have the situationship. I won't call it a relationship, the situationship. And you know, you had your blessed oils. My question would be, after it's over, was there a part where it was because of the way that it ended or because of how it ended, was that a spark for you to say, you know what, this isn't right? Like, I don't want to ask, are you bitter? But honestly, is there a piece of that that says, you know what, now I need to tell everybody?
You know, that's interesting because people always will use that narrative with women, right?
Exactly.
When a relationship goes south, they love to go on the bitter minute. Is she on the bitter ministry? Let me know, because I don't want to talk to her.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
Because what I understand is that people have, they like to hijack narratives, right?
Yes.
Like you said, right? They like to hijack them. And so what I've learned is you can't let anyone hijack the narrative, right? You can't go over and trample on people's things, right? Mm-hmm. And think they're not going to be upset about it. Let me go. I gave an example to this to one of my exes before. I said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to your house. I'm going to take all of your stuff. I'm going to take it to my house. I'm going to meet with you the next day. And I'm going to tell you I took it. And you are going to say to me, give it back. And I'm going to say, no, sir, I'm not. So tell me, how would you feel?
Right.
Right. And so I don't buy into this idea of women, like people try to make it a negative thing that she's bitter. Well, if you have experienced someone touching or doing something to you in the wrong manner, tell me what is the right response to that.
Right.
Because I surely wasn't sitting around singing a Kumbaya. This impacted every area of my life, right? And
right.
So I wouldn't articulate my experience if you're using it in a negative way, bitter. But what I will say is that, was I really upset about it? Absolutely, I was. Was I expecting more from this individual, not just as a good human being, right?
Right.
But as a leader of a mega church, and
yes,
and people should, right? And that's concerning. So,
yeah.
And so to say angry, no, I needed to, I would not have ever, let me say this first. I would not have ever thought that I would be in the social media streets in this manner. Anyone who knows me, people in Rochester were shocked.
Yeah,
they were shocked. And I told them I was as shocked as you all was. It was like I was watching my own movie.
That's
right?
So funny.
And I was the star. I had the lead role. And yeah, it was embarrassing. It was heart-wrenching. It was, it was all of those things. And so bitter, if you use it in a negative sense, no, not bitter. But what I will say, just like what, if you think about Naomi and Ruth, she says, don't call me Naomi. She says, call me bitter. Why? Because when life experiences happen, we fool ourselves to think there isn't a response. I know we like to play that
absolutely
there isn't, but there is a response.
Yeah. And one of the reasons that I specifically chose to use that word is because as a father, I want that word to have as little power as possible over my daughters. Mm. Right.
Yeah.
And so for me, I grew up with hearing, she's just a bitter, blank, blank, blank. And for me, as the older I got, the more emotionally intelligent I got and the more mature I got, it's okay, maybe she is, but she has every right to be. Because what did you tell her to get her to that space? What promises did you give her to get to that space? What did you do while you were laying with her to get her to that space? Because women don't wake up bitter. They multiply what you give them, right?
So. Yes. To me, like you said, I would never disavow the word, right? Because then I think that we try to control the responses.
Right.
And that's why in the words of T.D. Jakes in his Spellbreaker video, he talks about now it's showing up in the principal office. It's showing up at the jailhouse. Why? Because we don't like to deal with things for real. Right. And so if a woman is bitter, you're not going to know it that she is, because most people don't look at that in a favorable light. They don't look at the experiences, just as you said here, that has caused this type of result. And so if you don't want them to be bitter, you'll try to control it. But that's not
right.
Helpful for the growth of any individual, because now they're searching through the dictionary looking for a word to try to articulate the experience that's not bitter,
yes,
even though they may be that, right? And so
exactly,
it is about allowing them to own all of that, right? And to process through you know, all of that. And so, yeah, and we're evolving, right? We're ever learning and we're ever growing. And so I think the important thing is to make sure that space is created so that can happen. But if we try to control their responses and not allow them to utilize the word better, then what happens if we don't?
Yeah, absolutely agree. For as long as I can remember, dating in the church has always been celebrated until it's a leader, right? Until it's somebody that's sitting up on them steps. And then all of a sudden it's taboo, evil, pure sin, and nobody's supposed to know about it. Why is it okay for the congregation to date and break up in public view of the congregation, but those people that sit on that different level pew, right? They get the chairs with the big backs. That's what I used to call them when I was little. Daddy, why their chairs got the big backs? He would say, because they get the most of the money. But anyway, different conversation.
Oh, right. right.
Why is it that, and you spoke to controlling the narrative, why is it that the people that are quote unquote in leadership positions aren't allowed to stay people and date?
Yeah, they are allowed, but they choose not to, right? These are rules and things that we have established for ourselves, right? To think that in some way it protects us, right? And to me, you got to ask yourself the question, so how is it protecting you but not being public that you are in a relationship with someone? What I have found is when you cannot do that openly in a way that it should be done, there are a lot of things that people can do behind the back, because people are like, I didn't know he was dating Sheila, and he just took me out, right? And so this ideal of not sharing that, to me, that's just the only stipulations that the church is assigned to themselves and others who are in leadership roles. And so that's just their personal thing, or denomination establish it as a rule within the denomination.
I feel like we've had enough examples to this point of the elders and the deacons, you know, not acting in a manner, you know, subsequent of the title, right? I personally know a couple of elders and deacons that had we not been within their walls, probably should have got knocked out. But I feel like the other part of that, right, willing participant, why do you think, purely opinion-based, why do you think women still fall for these deacons and these elders, let alone the pastors?
Fall. So I don't probably wouldn't use, you know, the word fall.
Okay.
Because we are social beings, right? And we are created to be in relationship. And I think what is perplexing more or less for the women is that, you know, that what should be in the church or how men should treat women out inside the structure of the church should be different than out in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're not expecting these types of things to happen from a man of the cloth. And I think that's why women, if you have to use your word, fall, they fall for it, because they are hinging on their every word that when you say that you are a Christian, you are just that, the B-I-B-L-E. And that's the book for me, right? And so that's why I think this happens.
But we've seen it in other religions as well, right? So like, I hesitate to say that at this point, I feel like women in the church should approach dating with just as much caution as they do in the club, right? Because you don't know what you're getting, right? Because to me, as far as dating goes, if we're talking about dating in the Black church, it's just like the club. The lights are off. You mesmerized by the music, which is the message, right?
Yes.
And all you can do is operate off of this, how you feel. And then when you see the person, when the lights come on, after they done played that last song, you realize you've been dancing with, you know, And so I feel like there's a dishonest conversation when it comes to dating in the church, not from platforms like these where we can have this talk, right? But because of the business of church, the people that they will bring in to speak won't be allowed to have this type of conversation.
Yeah, so there's a lot of dishonesty and trickery, right, that goes on. This is, as I said earlier, a wonderful book. Deborah Cooper, she writes this book is, and what you're articulating here, she says, the Black church is where women, P-R-A-Y, and it is the place where men, P-R-E-Y.
Love it.
And so I love it. Yeah, I love it too, because for some reason, as I was thinking about this, and that is, why is it that we as women, we kind of throw out everything that we learned in the streets, right? Mm-hmm. Remember earlier, we were talking about ratchet and bougie and all of that.
Yes.
For some reason, ratchet and bougie, they got in this place for, you know, this, I'll just say, nullified way of looking and knowing and, you know, hearing things, right? We don't really think we see what we saw. We don't think that he's acting like a pimp, even though the characteristics are exactly like a pimp. And so to me, her book has been groundbreaking in that way. But this was the pushback, even for Deborah Cooper. This book was written in 2012. A lot of women pushed back with what she was writing because of this ideal of protecting our Black men. And this here, they felt as though this was exposing the Black man too much. And I said, what is the church purpose then? Our job is to expose, right, the sheep in wolf's clothing. But if you don't agree with these things that she's laying out here about the pimpology message, you know, the way that Black preachers pimp out Black women in the church. And let me say this, please do not comment through this thread talking about, you know, no, I'm not talking about la-di-da-di everybody, but I am talking about la-di-da-di somebody, right?
Yes.
And so we need to stop acting like the things that we see are not happening. And we also, the church is the space where these things should be addressed, right? But as I said earlier, there's subsequent generation of women who are coming behind us. And if we do not do a good job of making sure that this information is put out there for people to make good decisions about their life. And what I mean is, we on the street, we said, he's a pimp, don't go that way, right?
Yeah.
You call it like you see it. The church is different in that you'll see a pimp, but you won't even say nothing about it, but you're going on a date with them later, right? Because you threw out everything in the street that you knew. And that's the goal, right? The goal is that you won't come in here with the same mentality that you had in the street. And I think that male pastors, they have that in their playbook. And that is, you know, she reading scripture, she Proverbs 31 and they're down, she looking for Boaz. And so she's not going to be on guard, like the Bible says, to guard your heart, right? She's not going to be on guard. You know that she has let down her guards in the space of the church, because the space of the church is to be that safe space that people are not going to harm you.
Yeah.
Well, the news, let me tell you, the news today is this. You can be harmed, and you need to make sure that you are well equipped to be able to make good decisions for your life, specifically in the area of dating. And we can't continue to give people passes. That's just, we can't get out of jail free card, right?
Absolutely.
Because you got to think about who is coming after us. And like I said, I lay this side by side with Trump. They were trying to do everything they can to get him impeached. They don't want him to run again. Why? Because he is not good for the American people. And so it is with bad pastors. The problem is we have too many people covering bad pastors. Mm-hmm. And they come out and say, I got away. While the woman, we're still looking for the man in the Bible when it said she was caught in the adultery. Well, I'm pretty sure he was the one married, not her. And where is he? And why don't we get him? Because the only person that's getting stoned is the woman. So that goes back to your point, you know, being the villain and the hero. And that's okay. I'm okay with that. I just didn't know that I had the intestinal fortitude to be both. But praise God today that this experience didn't kill me. And I can alert other people on the things that I was alerted on, but didn't do anything about. And so, yes.
Wow.
This pimpology stuff in the church must be revealed and it must be addressed. They got homeboys helping homeboys.
You know, it's so funny because I have, oh my God, I might have to do a whole nother thing on this, but I have my father's generation is literally the generation where you either went to war, right? or mm-hmm. you turned your life around and went to the church. And so those people yes. that join the military, they come back and they be like, oh, dude is a pastor now? Man, I grew up with him. We used to be blank, 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 right? And yeah, so yeah. It is very well known that a lot of pastors not only used to be pimps, used to be gang members, mm. used to be mm-hmm. things like that. And again, we're not talking about everybody. We're talking about somebody, mm-hmm. right? They all yeah. used to be in that world. And I think they've learned to weaponize that past. When I say weaponize, I mean, they use it as, mm-hmm. look where I've come from, right? And while you're busy looking where they've come from, they put the hood mm-hmm. back on and then they come get you.
They come get you. Yeah. So let me give you a little of this historical trajectory with my relationships and dating in the church. For 10 years, I did not date anybody. Don't call me. Don't text me. None of that.
I right? remember 10, when we were on Twitter, you used to talk right. about that. Yep.
10 years. In 2006, I decided to step in that space of dating. When I decided to step in that space of dating, it was the most blissful time of my life for 2006, 2007, 8, and not 2009 rolled up on me in 22s. And so I'm telling you, this stuff is interesting. And so the young man had been trying to get me out on the date for years. And so I stepped in that space.
Okay.
2009, the person who I was dating was an associate pastor. His parents was pastors. He got his ex-girlfriend pregnant, flew down to Vegas and married her because the family said, you've done this before. We are trying to rebuild our church and we just cannot have you doing that. Wow. The thing was, I didn't know anything about it. Remember, I was 10 years deep, solid, no dating at all.
Right.
And so this was the first person, you know, I had dated. And I thought that this certainly was going to be different from what I've seen in the world. But it was not. And then when it was exposed, it left a lot of damage between the church that I was the associate pastor and the mm-hmm. church that his parents were. And it strained the relationship. 2 years thereafter, then I meet this other person and yeah. he is no better. And it's just interesting. Lately, they tried to compare notes, right? People like to try to discredit the witness. Yes, sir. They tried to compare notes. Yes. You getting that right hot off the press. Yes, sir. They tried to compare notes. What he did is he tried to make it seem like she was dating him while she was dating me. And that was farthest from the truth than anything.
Yeah.
And so when I kind of was getting a little insight in that this was going down, I said, y'all really listening to a person who took plane tickets from one city to another, cut them, put them together, and then try to tell me he was in one city and he wasn't in the other. And he didn't think I was smart enough to figure that out. But y'all going to listen to him? Y'all got that? Because one of the friends kept saying, we read the text messages. I said, well, you know what? I've wrote a dissertation and you need more than one source. And so if you would like to have the other information, you probably should talk to the person that this young man has given you text messages about to say, see, she was with me when she was with him. The devil is a liar and all his friends he shake hands with. And so, you know, it goes back to your point. You know, I didn't even think I was going to be in these spaces. But since Goliath didn't recognize that David had come on the scene, well, I'm David. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. And women are going to know from my mouth that these things are happening. And they need to safeguard themselves from it. Yeah. So there you have it.
One of the things that has always frustrated me with not only the church, but with celebrities as a whole, the way that we see celebrities mm-hmm. is that we will say, yeah, he's doing that. But the word is still the word. And the word he's given is still we can't judge the vessel because God will use those in the highways and byways and yada, yada, yada. I feel like there's so many catch-22s that for somebody coming in, it's almost like you have to stay on guard for both sides. What do you say to that?
what I say to that is that you need to pick a side, because this, to me, this rhetoric is being, it's been perpetuated, and it keeps on this, you know, all of these excuses. The church, yeah. In particular, the Black church that I do love, they need to decide what they're going to be and who they're going to be, right?
Right.
Stop making all these, excuses that why you are not who you should be. And then say, oh, well, he's a vessel. God is using him. Well, I would push back on that. I would say God isn't using him at all. He shows up for you all because he is there because you all worship him, right? Mm-hmm. So this has nothing to do with, well, God wouldn't allow these types of things to happen at all. Y'all buy into him, right?
Absolutely.
And it absolutely is crazy, and it doesn't make any sense. And so we can keep on, and people say that often, Chucky. They say, well, you know, we are just flawed human beings. And, and I say, okay, so if we're so flawed, then why are you here? If we're going to continue the way of life that we were before, then why are we here? I don't want to come.
Right.
Don't invite me to that party because I didn't come over here. Yeah, we used to sing a song, Chucky, that said, I come over here to live right. And so if I'm not coming over here to live right, then the question becomes, then why am I here?
Yeah.
Right. And so and then you don't do you don't help the individual, right, by making these types of statements. Right. Yeah. They're flawed human beings. Just God uses these individuals, and we have to make exceptions for it. Right. And this is nonsense. The rhetoric is sometimes now, as I sit back and reflect in my time of silence, which I love. This is how we're operating. This is the best that we have to offer. Right. And if it is, but don't count me in. So we need to address those things. I don't think at all we should be using this type of phraseology to perpetuate bad habits. We just should not do it. And it isn't congruent with scripture. We use biblical text to support bad behaviors. And Paul lays out this argument. Shall I continue in sin? He responds to his own argument that he lays out and says, God forbid. Yeah. Right. So we can't continue to do that.
I was just looking for a tweet that I had and I can't find it, but I feel like it relates to this conversation heavily, because I said we have to talk about the happiness, love, and joy that we steal from people when we ask them to turn the other cheek and be the bigger person. And so that's the part of the conversation that I wish the church would do a better job of, right? Be more responsible with the souls that you say that you are accountable for, and stop asking the congregation to do better than the leadership.
Right. Yeah. Right. And we have leaders for a reason, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, it's just, we got a lot of work. Right. We got a lot of work to do. And we just cannot continue to exist as the church in this form. And it still baffles me to this day, to which you would allow your leader to get up there and tell blatant lies. And no one said, bro, we need you to sit down.
Yeah.
We need you to get yourself together. When you are addicted to the lights, you're not going to sit down. You're not going to get yourself together.
In fact,
in fact, you hope you escape the fire without any smoke stains being on you at all. But as I said before, it does not do him any service. And it certainly it didn't do any good service to me as well. But what I know about myself and how I'm wired is that if I know that I'm not where I need to be as it relates to my relationship with the Father, you don't have to ask me to sit down. You don't have to ask me to give over my title. I gladly surrender that because I do understand that, just because you might want me up to preach, God has somebody else who can do it for that time while you get yourself together.
Right.
And you have to ask yourself the question, why are these behaviors being repeated over and over again? And I would say it is because we have other leadership who won't stand up to the plate and say, bro, we got to have you sit down.
Yeah.
We just need you to take a break. We need you to think about what your relationship is with the Lord, because this ain't even about, you know, the fanfare that they get, but this is about your soul.
Yes.
And if you don't care nothing about your soul, then you go right ahead and continue to do what it is that you're doing. But God is not after all of that other stuff we think he's after. It's your soul, bro, that's jacked up. And the truth of the matter is, you're jacking up other people who are following your leadership, right? That's not, and even when we talk about the intellectual capital, how is that smart?
Yeah.
It isn't.
Yeah.
It isn't.
It's irresponsible. It's irresponsible. Yes. At the least, it's irresponsible. How do you feel knowing that for a time, a period of time, undetermined, your name will ever be attached to Jamal Bryant?
Yeah. So you say how I feel about it?
Yeah.
I wish I could go back in time and just kind of shift some of that. Really, absolutely, because you know, you have to think about it. Jamal was he was a public figure. And I was, in a sense, not in the scale of that. How would we decide to measure it? Okay. Like I said, I was well held in a good regard in this city. And that did a lot of damage. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, people may say, well, you know, she did damage to herself. Right. No, the truth, you should want the truth. And so that told me a lot about the church as it relates to this ideal of being truth tellers, right? You can't be. And so my name being tied to that forever, I wish I could go back in time and get my whole name and life back.
Get your whole name back.
Get my whole name, my life back, yes. Yes, because it's a building. You have to build your reputation back up from something like this, right?
And that's harder to do now. That's way harder to do now than it has ever been, is to rebuild a reputation.
Yeah, but see, for me, like I said, I never have a problem. I'm not title hungry, right? So for me, it's more important to me to have a relationship with the Father that's in good standing than with the people.
Yeah,
this was Saul. Saul loved the people, right? And so, you know, for me, it was a blessing in disguise, and that it allowed me to pull myself back and go back to those 10 years that I had where I was dating no one at all.
Yeah,
and to reconnect back with the Father, because to me, that's most important.
Do you think that the church has done, or I won't even say a disservice, because it sounds like all my questions are attacking the church. What do you think the messaging has been that has made women feel, at least in theory or in practice, so determined to have a husband versus making husbands or making men value becoming a husband? Right. It seems like the lectures and the talks and the sermons that I've sat in on have been on the virtuous woman, have been on, you know, all these things. And what type of woman does a man want? But I can't remember any popular speeches, theory, air quotes, any popular sermons about becoming a better man so that you can find the woman. Why is it always the other way around, the onus on the woman to find the husband?
Yeah, because this is how, you know, this is how society is structured, right? It's always been the emphasis on the woman. The woman needs to keep herself clean. The woman needs not to be with 50,000 men out in the street. And a man don't want a woman that's been out here, you know, having 50 bodies on him, but he can have 50 bodies and still be considered a virtuous man. And if you read Proverbs 31, we always highlight that, right? For women, right? What you're pointing out here. But that particular passage was not just for women. Mm. Think about that. Where's the who can find a virtuous man, right? And so I just think this is society has structured it this way, that this burden to be virtuous has been put on the woman. And I think that women it is our responsibility to call men to be a virtuous men. It's like the Kevin, I think it's the Kevin Samuels, I'm gonna plug his name here. He's that public figure. He said, it was interesting because someone says, but you're not a valuable man, Kevin. So you tell him, you know, that, but that's exactly what someone, they did a, you know, a depiction of him, and he, they were doing two different voices. And they said, but you're talking about me, but you ain't, right? You divorced two times, right? And so, right? So we see these disconnects, right? Yeah. Where women are responsible for, like I said, being virtuous, being pure, being honorable, but and that's what I said. But right,
we get all the excuses. We get the second chances. We get the weight of leadership, and we get all these reasons why we don't have to be the man that we told you we were when we were trying to date you.
But it also goes down to a dangerous species, right? So women feel like if they're called men to what God has called them to be, it is our job to protect them no matter what they do.
Yeah.
And my research showed that, right? Is that like you're asking that question, the burden being laid upon the women. And oftentimes women, we need to think about that. We need to think about, so how does you know, him not treating you well, and then we turn around and we protect them because society says he's an endangered species. So one thing takes precedence over the other, and that is protecting that male while you know that he is not a virtuous man at all. And he doesn't intend to be, because they understand that we as women, that's how we are wired, right? I love what you just said earlier about this sounds like it is attacking. Well, it depends who's listening, right? People who want to learn and grow and understand and are real thought leaders and thought people, this doesn't sound like attacking to them. And I think that's the problem here. We often don't say what needs to be said as it relates to our leaders and the churches because it appears to be attacking. Martin Luther, and I'm not talking about Martin Luther King, but I will tell you when my life was really changed was when I heard about Martin Luther taking this 95 theses and pinning it on the Catholic church door. It got him excommunicated. Mm-hmm. But the truth is still the truth, even if lie is standing next to it. And so for people who don't like their dirty laundry aired out, this sounds attacking. But people who are really after the heart of the Father, for them, this is music to their ears because they can hear it and they can learn and they can look in the scriptures and say, God, help make me over again, right? Because the truth is this, if it's attacking to them, that's because your arrogance is speaking to you that the church is in a perfect state. And the truth of the matter is, it is not. And we need to... We can't say that we're the church that are calling people to a higher standard. And since you use the male and the female, it's okay for the male to run amok in the kingdom.
Right.
Right. But the women cannot do so. And so this is a long history, right, of this, the way that men are treated versus how women are treated. But my research showed that if some of that ownership falls on us.
Yeah.
It's because we don't call them to, you know, this virtuous lifestyle. We'll accept them with their 10 kids, but you better not have 10 as a woman, right?
Right. Right.
Right? And so, So we as women need to, in some ways, and I'm not trying to let our brothers off the hook because we shouldn't.
Right.
But women in some ways have to start to look introspectively and say, what are we doing to hurt us and our vocational mobility, if we're talking about within the framework of the church? And or how are we hurting ourselves, not addressing issues of sexism, addressing issues of oppression? Yeah. And so these things never get addressed for us is because we put our men on a higher pedestal than we do women. And see, as I said earlier, when and then you have men comparing notes, right, with one another to say, I got your back, bro. But women, we have a hard time, and I'm not saying this for everybody, but we have a hard time standing next to women because we don't want to be excommunicated. So if the charge is you are to remain virtuous and he can run amok in the kingdom, then that is what this is will be. And this is how this needs to play out. If you want to be able to keep your space in the church. Wow. So I know it was a long answer, but yes.
No, you're perfectly fine. We got two or three more and then we'll get ready to wrap up. One of the conversations that I have with both my sister, well, with everybody that's close enough to me to have it. You know me, I'm a politics nerd, right? I absolutely love politics. And when we started talking about this this topic, I couldn't help but think the Black church is just like the Democratic Party, right? Mm-hmm. We got this moving set of values that continues to move so that we can attract everybody. Yet when it's time to stand on the things that we have told all these different groups, we're nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
What is it about being so all-inclusive that limits your effectiveness? Because I'll say the Republican Party, they're going to tell you what they're going to do. They're going to preach to the 10 people that's going to listen, and then they're going to do it, right?
They're going to do it.
If you hate anything, Republicans will always have my respect for doing what they say they are going to do. Now, like it or love it, that's a different conversation. But what is it about the church being so inclusive that it limits effectiveness?
Well, I guess I will probably ask first, like, a definition for inclusiveness. And this is interesting because my sister and I had this conversation yesterday about inclusion, right?
Yeah.
And so I guess I would need to ask you, to define that, because it could be defined and sold, right? So what are we talking about here?
So this is an avenue that when I launched this conversation, I mean, this podcast, I said, there's some things I just don't want to get into. I promise I don't. But if we're being historically correct, the Black church, the Black church initially did not allow for homosexuality. When we got to the initial Black church as we know it, coming from slavery to, you know, whatever those eras are, the Black man was supposed to be in the home. He was supposed to be virtuous. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to attend church. There were certain things that you had to do to be seen as a leader. And so now accepting, I'll defer some of this ownership, the Dave Chappelle alphabets, right?
Right.
Now accepting all of those people. And again, a soul is a soul. So I get it. Mm-hmm. But when you change your core set of values, you're no longer allowed to, you no longer allow yourself, at least in my perception, the ability to be effective, because now you have to make sure you don't offend the people that you just brought in.
Well, what I can say, based on, you know, what you're putting forth here, is that, you know, I think that our values will change. Our values do change. They evolve, right?
Yep.
And so when we talk about these core set of values, again, I think earlier we were talking about, I said, it is always important for, you know, churches to go back and revisit, right, what they have listed, like you just used the Democrat Party and the Republican Party.
Right.
I'm looking at to make sure they're congruent with their values.
Right.
And I do think it's an ever kind of revisiting and changing because we're not in the same time frames, right?
Yes.
And so then you have to ask yourself the question, do these same values that we have in place are the same values that we live by, right? And so if so, then great. If not, then everything, I think you said about being a political, you know, you like that,
I'm
right?
I'm a nerd,
You're a political nerd. I'm not a political junkie, but I do like it. But I do think that we need to revisit them, right, for the 21st century. We're reading ancient texts, right?
Yes.
In the time when the Black church, you know, really was evolving, late 1800s, 1900s, you know, so a lot of things as we knew it then, is a little bit different now. And so those same set of core values for us might have changed. And so if they have, then we need to change them. If not, and we're going to stay with these set of core values, then we need to live by what we also have written in stone, that these are our core values. But I think sometimes what we may do as a church, we like to pick out different things that you know, we want to point out and say, we disagree with that. You know, like you just said, right. the LGBTQ, something came in, even when I had my pause. No, so, right. And so, yeah, so just my point is this, we need to be congruent. Mm-hmm. If we had established a set of values, and the truth of the matter is, when we look at our churches, if we visit what we have, you know, as our core set of values, we should examine ourselves to even see if we fit the bill, right? And so, and as it relates to the LGBTQ community, we understand that this is specifically for the Black church. And I don't think, you know, when we're capturing the historical trajectory of this particular group, because the group now is different than, you know, what it was during those times. It was more in the closet than out, right?
Correct.
And so what I do think that not because now we hit the society has evolved in a different way, it does beg the question to churches, you know, so where's our stance on this, right? Yeah. And to be able to support it biblically. And so for me, I have not, you know, with the things that I'm reading, I haven't seen anyone put forth a good case for, you know, why this group should not be accepted in, right? And so this is all about access. So say, for example, why are you focusing on them being the LGBTQ? You allow them to come into the same space that you came in.
Absolutely.
When you was out in these streets, and you allowed the word of God to change you, right? And so those are the things I think that, so when we talk about core values, that should be one of our core values, right?
Yeah.
We are ever evolving. We are paying attention to, you know, what is God saying to us now in this time, right? Because we have a bad habit of excluding those that we do not want to be included. And then we will pull up on particular scriptures all out of context to build an argument.
Yes.
And the weight of your argument cannot stand under these type of different premises that you try to set forth, right? Because what you know is you want to lead a group out rather than going to God and saying, so God, how should we, as the 21st century, what they were in, you know, LGBTQ, we didn't know them as in this form as we know them now. What I mean by that is, you know, being out as they are.
Absolutely.
And so, and I don't think that the message of the cross is about leaving people out. So when we talk about this ideal of being inclusive, so I guess we need to know what we're talking about, because so you're asking the question, does that lead to us not being effective? I would say if we are not thinking about what this should look like us for now, then that's what's not allowing us to be effective, because you can't even articulate clearly. And I'm not saying this for everybody. I'm just saying from what, you know, the different things that I'm looking at as it relates to, you know, our LGBTQ community. We just need to give them the access,
right?
Leave it up to the Lord to change us. And I'm thanking God that the church left me up to the Lord to change me, right? Because some of the things we do and we say can be hurtful, right? Instead of helpful.
Right.
And so, and we have to own that as the church. How are you going to say, you know, we love each other, but yet and still we're stoning a group of people? That doesn't
look like, it's not congruent.
Sound like, feel like, right?
Absolutely.
On the message of the cross. And so that's my stance on that as it relates to, you know, even putting together your values. Are you writing these in a way that specifically keep groups out, right?
Yeah.
My dissertation is all about gender equality. What are we doing?
Yes.
When we talk about laws, right? Black people couldn't have a seat at the table. Why? Because they appealed to certain things that was written in the law, right?
Yeah.
And so now you see Black people who are more educated now than ever is able to revisit these things, right? And say, this needs to be updated and changed because we're not doing that.
I'm so glad you said that because I feel, and I know it's impossible, I feel like the Bible should have amendments, right?
Yeah.
Because get caught up with that. And I think that's what makes it so hard to be effective is the Bible is so definitive in its written history. It's so definitive in what's been passed down that now all you can do is leverage the various verses and stories to support the argument that you want. But if it was amended, if there was an amendment to it, then you could say, as per the 2006, you know, update to the King James Version, now we know that X, Y,
right,
Z, right?
Right.
But I just feel like there's so many oxymorons and there's so many things that are left up into interpretation, even where it says, lean not to your own understanding. Well, what else am I supposed to lean on? Mm-hmm. Right? Like there's so many oxymorons that I feel like it should be some amendments to it. Do you think that would ever be possible? Is there a group of people that could agree enough about faith, common sense, and current, you know, situations, current goings on in the world that could rewrite the Bible?
Okay, so what you're talking about amendments, I'm not thinking of amendments as it relates to amending what the Bible says. I'm thinking of amendments in a way that what the documents that the church create that governs them, right?
Okay.
And those amendments, as I know it within the church structure, most churches do. They revisit them, they make the necessary adjustments. This is when you get down to, you know, Nicaea Creed. I want to get into this now.
Sure.
But what scholars did. They all sat around the table and they thought about different things and how the church should respond to them. So if Jesus is God, then what makes them different and what makes them the same? And so they sat around, they had these conversations, and they all were able to agree upon, you know, how they wanted to articulate what they believe about a particular thing.
Gotcha.
And so, yes, the church does amend, but so when we're talking about the ancient documents of the Bible, they have been amended itself, right? So we don't just have the King James Version, which needed, you know, he felt the need to have his name on everything. That's why we got the King James. So people need to know about that.
The king of branding.
At that time, right? He's the king. Right. He was the king and he could stamp his name on everything. Right, and the Catholic Church could not control him.
My man gave the first business lesson of the histories.
He did, right.
Branding.
Right. And for yourself, right? This personal self-branding. But yes, so we have different versions of scripture, right? You got the NIV, you got the NISV. So yes, there are people, scholars, who literally sit around and they look at the text and its form now and look at the time and say, well, are there any adjustments that need to be made? So yeah, it does happen. It really does. People are really thinking thoughtfully about these types of things. Is there a resurrection or not? Is the vaccination the devil or not, right?
Yeah.
So there are people who are really thinking thoughtfully.
I'm not touching the vaccination. I'm not.
Don't do it,
Listen,
brother. Don't do it. I'm rolling out. We're doing a clinic here tomorrow. So yes, don't do it, bro.
That's the conversation I'm almost more scared to have than gender. I'm not. doing this vaccination thing.
Oh my gosh.
It is turned into something that it didn't need to be. I will say that much. It is turned into something that it didn't need to be. Getting ready to close. What does Lady Tanya Griffin wish dating in the church looked like?
I wish dating in the church looked like that people would date openly, that they are honest about, the person that they are involved with. There'd be full transparency.
Yeah.
When you're dating. And then we get slick. We say dating means I can go around and, date a plethora of people. But a person that you went on a date with or that thought that you were dating her, she didn't know that.
Right.
And so
single till you married.
And so they try to keep these things right. And that's what was interesting with this whole thing with the mega pastor is that for him, dating was a moving target.
Yeah.
You weren't going to pin him down. And so that's what I wish. I wish that we would be honest about what this is and honest about what it is not. And I think whether it was in the church or out of the church, when we are not fully transparent about what things are and what things are not, this is what it ends up to become, right? Yeah. And they know it. Most men who are in churches, that's what we're talking about. This is game, right? You're just running game. That's it. And the women that are hurt by these games you play, think about that. And maybe they think about it and they just don't care, right? But you need to be fully transparent. You should be. Now we got to go around and ask you, well, what's your definition for dating? I never had to do that. At the age of 16, I was fully engaged, right? And this man knew exactly what he wanted. We didn't sit up here and say, do you got the Greek for the dating? Do you know the Hebrew or the Latin, right? Everything was laid out and we understood that. And so that's exactly what I would say. I want to see it. And another piece of that is that I want women to not allow men to hold them hostage when a relationship should be public or not. Mm. That's another game. That's game.
Tell me more about that. Tell me more about that. What do you mean?
Yeah, what I mean by that is men, specifically in the church, they feel like they got to wait for the moment, the day, and the hour that God has come down to them and said, the spaceship hasn't arrived yet, but when it does, God will tell me when we should go public. As if to say, going public is going to damage your relationship. Don't buy into that. That's crazy. So if you decide to do it 10 years later to go public, so you're stronger now, right?
Right.
So really, and these are the games people play. And these are, we use ways to try to articulate it. We don't want nobody messing up our relationship. So we waited, to become, that's game. And women need to call it that. When a man tell you that, you should say, I'm out, deuces. Because he has told you everything you need to know about him.
Absolutely.
If you was an Easter egg and he felt like he was hiding you, then sis, you signed up for it, right? I signed up for it, right? Because I thought at some point that this will go from private to public. But the thing was, the person never had any intention. So I think that it is really important that women, I don't want to hear what I have a low tolerance for women who are telling me, he said to keep the relationship private. Please don't call me. Because, because I'm not going to have any good advice for you about this private or the reasoning they're given to you that you allowed yourself to be psychologically hijacked to buy into this ideal as if the privacy safeguards the relationship. Let me tell you what it safeguards. It safeguards him not being exposed to all of the train of women that he has in every city.
That part.
And so, That part
might be a good place to wrap it up, but I do have one follow up, one last.
Yes,
that one was heavy. Will there be a time when Tonya Griffin and Jamal Bryant can mend the fence, or whatever that saying is, where they can get back to being amenable? Like, if you guys were chosen to work on the same council to do something, do you think you could do that now?
So one of the things of the church that we believe in is forgiveness, right?
Sure.
Right. And so people believe in forgiveness without real apologies, right? You took me in a public space and you know you lied. I've never been in your home. You said also that I was clout chasing, but you were with me 8 years, right? So to answer your question, absolutely. I believe in us being able to, come to some type of, relationship as it relates to, the church type work. Of relationship, right? The work, right. Yes, I think that can happen. But I think that this is a bad example of what's happening right now, right? What I mean by that is, how is it and why isn't it that you would not have a pastor who will come back and say, sis, I dragged you in a public space. It was demeaning and it was disrespectful. And right. That should never have happened, right? Yep. And so to answer your question, the Bible says with God, all things are possible. But trust this, I'm not looking for it. And right. I don't really need it, right?
Yes.
But I think that, you have daughters, right? And that what you did was, it just wasn't called for. And you lied. You blatantly lied.
Yeah.
Blatantly. Yeah. Right. And so, there's redemption. That's what this is all about, right? Redeeming.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Well, they say that's why they say that's why we get more than one daughter, is for the man we used to be.
If that was true, you would have changed your ways. I know men who you got a plethora of daughters, right?
Yeah,
lots of daughters, and they haven't even changed their ways, because the truth of the matter is, they'll try to act like they're going to stand up for their daughters. But the movie Sparkle, the older version.
Yes, I remember the first version. Yes.
Right. The mama said, I know a snake when I see one.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so when these young men come and are dating your daughter, you should recognize them, because that's how you act. And why would you want your daughters with a man such as yourself, as if you're the standard of what a man is?
Right.
My father was the standard of a man. He would never, and you don't know how many men who told me, they said he really did that. That is disgusting that a man would do that. And then you lead, women are following you, right?
Yeah.
And you allow a pastor to mishandle a woman and think that's appropriate, and he thought it was funny. I didn't think nothing of it was funny. Now, this is one thing I can say. If you were coming with the truth, right, lay out the facts, right? But you didn't do that. What you did is you tried to discredit me to say, she ain't been in my house. I said, Exhibit A. You talked about my dissertation was about empowering women. If you want to read it now, it's in the Library of Congress, and it is in ProQuest. And so people never took him to task and said, I know no dissertation. It's almost 200-300 pages. Ain't going to be just about no empowering women.
Right.
So he was appealing to his ideal. It lacked substance. Lacked substance. You didn't read it, bro. And you got people who would find a reason to let you say that, man, don't worry about it, Doc. Right? She was doing this here with it. No, but you were wrong. Wrong is wrong, even on the right day. So I know this is a long, response to your question, but I do believe in that. And I think it's necessary, right? You did it in the public space. Your apology should be big as your disrespect.
Absolutely.
And what I'm saying, just come back and retract some of that. Listen, I said she wasn't in the house. I lied.
Right.
I said I read her dissertation. I lied. I dragged her in the public space because I was mad how Monique made my baby mama look on TV. No, y'all made yourself look like that.
Well, you know, the thing about my the thing Lord. About it is it's always oh, funny Jesus. That it's always funny that people love wisdom, swear they want wisdom, but will only allow themselves to hear opinion. Right.
Wow.
And wow. I think that you know, like you said, the truth always comes out. I don't care if it's 20 years later. One thing about the truth is that thing gonna drip till it come out. It's gonna drip. So
yeah,
getting ready to wrap up. You are now on stage in front of 20,000 people. You're the keynote. They're all women. What do you want them to leave knowing about Dr. Tonya Griffin and about their chances to date in the Black church?
What I want them to know is that I am, I'm rooting for them. We need more women who are revolutionary. We need women who are not just going to, you know, stand for the status quo, right? Yeah. We need more Angela Davis than we come on here, somebody today. And I want people, women to be inspired to revolutionary change. Yeah. We make up over 50% of the Black church. You have to ask yourself, what are y'all doing? You got more degrees than most of the Black men have. Yep. And they got the they have all the prestige and the power. And where are you situated in this story? And why are we settling for crumbs when God didn't call us to crumbs? Since that's all I'm saying. So what they need to know about me is that, as you just said, I'm working on, you know, women's behalf. We started a Be Brave group. It meets every Sunday at 7 o'clock at night. It is a confidential group. You have to go through the website, Black Women Voices, to sign up. And then we send the link after you have signed up. We also ask that cameras are on for full transparency, because some of the stories that I've heard in these 6 years of research and the stories that I'm hearing right now, I have made it my mission in life is to stand and to partner with women from cradle to grave to walk them through these types of experiences so that they can indict bad behavior where it needs to be indicted, but they can walk in the freedom that God has called them to as women.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been rocking with the great one, Dr. Tonya Griffin, and yours truly, Chuck Hawkins, here at the Hawk Vision Podcast. We've been talking about dating in the Black church, the business of church, and how they meet in the middle and sometimes never touch. I hope this interview was informative. I hope we added a smile to your day. Most importantly, we hope you helped you shorten the learning curve to your journey to success and understanding. Buy your boy a coffee. I'm out, as you see. Like, share, and subscribe across all your platforms. Send in your messages and your guest suggestions. If we can make it work, we will. I cannot continue to grow the show without you guys, my visionaries. And I appreciate you so much that you gave us your time today. You know how it goes. There is absolutely no miracle that will ever happen without someone doing something. We'll see you either at the top or from the top. Dr. Griffin, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you, my good brother. I appreciate your much success to you and everything you're doing.